Good morning. I'm really grateful to be here again. My name is Kyle. Yeah, I'm really excited to be here. It's a great weekend, just coming off Thanksgiving weekend, and an opportunity to really pay attention to what we're thankful for. So here at the Vineyard, we've been talking for the last few months now about the good life, right? We've been characterizing or kind of paying attention to all the gifts or the fruits of the Spirit, I should say. So love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control. My mom drilled them into me as a kid. I can still do it. But we've been talking about those and how they impact our lives as Christians. Like, that's who we are. Those are gifts from the Holy Spirit. And we've been framing them up in, like, how do we live a good life? Like, what does that look like? What does it look like to not just survive our days, but, like, enjoy them with God and bless other people and all that? So as we've been going through this, I was thinking of, like, a few weeks ago when Jordan was here talking about peace, and I felt like Jordan kind of came and gave us this, like, collective hug, right? Like, reminding us that we have all these anxieties and fears and worries, and that Jesus is standing with us, right? And saying, I'll take all of those, and we'll be okay. That was so good for me. And Chris actually kicked off this series talking about joy. If you remember, he talked about the verse from John 16 where Jesus says, like, in the world, you're going to find trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. We got to talk about, like, what does that victory in our lives look like, and being able to take joy in that. So it's just been really good. So I'm here today to wrap up this series on the good life. And because our co-lead pastor Chris is not here and can't defend himself, I'm going to throw him under the bus quick, which I think is appropriate and expected. But so he emailed me a couple months ago, and he said, okay, you're going to wrap up the series, and we're going to talk about the last gift of the Spirit, or last fruit of the Spirit, endurance. And I was like, I don't think that's one of them. And so, like any good millennial, I just didn't respond to his email. And so he was at my house like a week later and sitting at my kitchen table, and he said, hey, you never responded to my email. Like, are you good talking about the last fruit of the Spirit, endurance? And I was like, I'm not the pastor here, just a lay person, but I don't think that's one of them. And he's like, yes, Kyle, it is. And so we looked it up, and I took a lot of joy out of proving him wrong. But as we continue to talk about it, we thought, like, that is what we need to talk about, right? Like, how do we endure over the long haul? What does a good life look like, whether we have, you know, just one more day here or another 60 years, you know? We thought that was an important thing to talk about. And really, endurance is that crucial element, I think, to a life well-lived, to the good life. A few weeks ago, Dietrich Winter and Chris and I had the opportunity to sit down with, to have lunch with some leaders of another vineyard down in Minneapolis. And their lead pastor, he maybe was like 10 or 15 years older than myself, and he said, you know, this is a guy who does kingdom work like every day, right? And he said, you know, my goal in life is to become an old man who has found peace and contentment and kindness, and then is able to give that back to everyone else. You know, it's such a simple way of putting it, but I thought, like, yeah, that's, like, what I want, too. But as we continue to talk about it and kind of unpack that idea, you know, it's just, we realize how rare that is to find. And really, because we all know that it's easier said than done, right? Like, life can be so brutally difficult. And it is easier, I know this is true in my life, it's easier to every day and every year become just a little bit more cynical, you know, a little bit more bitter, a little bit more guarded, and it's hard. It's hard to hang on at times. So really, that's what we're going to talk about. Like, what does it take? What does it take now, and what does it take over the long haul? So that's what I'm going to talk about today. Is that okay with you guys? Is that all right? I don't have a plan B if it's not all right, so we're going with it. All right. I also want to bring this up. Like, I think this is an important note. Like, I'm kind of giving this sermon to myself a little bit. I'm a young man still. I'm not talking about endurance from any place of authority. I'm talking about it, like, aspirationally for me. Like, that is who I want to be. I want to become an older person who's increasingly content and is able to share that peace and that joy and the kindness with everyone I come into contact with. And my reality right now, and I think Janine's a little bit too, my wife, is we're coming out of, like, a difficult year in many ways. It's been a good year. We've been able to count our blessings for sure, but it's been a hard, hard year. We've been stretched and confused at times and had to grow. And so, like, you find yourself in this place where, like, I'm trying to cultivate, like, this small little flame of hope, right? It's not like a bonfire. It's not roaring. It's not big. It's just a small hope that I don't want it to go out, you know? And so as I've been thinking about this message, I'm asking God, I'm going, you know, like, how, God, how long until I see you step into this place with me, or till I notice it more? Like, how long will the hard times go on here? And so that's what we're going to talk about a little bit. I think there may be some of you here, hopefully not everyone, but some of you who have either been in that place or in that place now. So I'm just going to take a minute before we really dive in. I'm going to pray quick. Jesus, I ask that you be here with us, that you just spend some time with us this morning, that you just open up our hearts and awaken us to what I think you have for us. We thank you for that. We thank you for this weekend and for being here. In your name we pray. Amen. So before we kind of really dig into it, I want to talk about what is endurance, right? Like, definitions are important. I like words. I want to talk about endurance because I think that there is, we often misunderstand kind of that idea, the idea of endurance. And so I'm going to talk today about something like American endurance versus Jesus endurance, because I think they're almost opposite in some ways. So American endurance, I would characterize it like this. I mean, we have like terms for it, right? Like grit your teeth, grin and bear it, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You know, we have all these ideas that are really about trying harder and put like the responsibility on us to make it, like us as an individual. And again, maybe it's the millennial thing, but all of those things just sound terrible to me, just terrible and also exhausting. Like, I don't want to pull myself up by the bootstraps at every time things go wrong. Like, that's really tiring. And so like, I loved fishing with my dad as a kid. I liked summer fishing. I didn't like ice fishing so much because we had a nice fish house, but we wouldn't use it. And we would, my dad is the type that was like totally happy just staring down a dark hole out in the open for hours, right? Didn't matter if the fish, you know, he was always like, Kyle, let's call fishing, not catching. And I'm like, well, okay, but it'd be nice to catch something. And so I'm like shivering. I'm a little kid. And I'd be like, Dad, can we go? And he'd be like, shiver harder. You know, like, that's your body's response. Like, okay, you know? And then we get home, and my mom would be like, hey, how was it? And I would tell her how it was, and my dad's like, well, you're alive, you know? And like, but that's kind of the American idea, right? Like, who cares how miserable you are? Like, you made it. You're still alive. You're still breathing. And I mean, there's something to that, I guess. I think we also have this another kind of American idea of endurance, which is like, have more willpower, right? Now, some of you out here have a ton of willpower. I don't. I don't have any willpower, like, at all. So I don't know if you guys have seen this. There are a bunch of scientists were like, they wanted to test willpower. So they took 5-year-old little kids, and they sit them down at a table in a room. And so there'd be a little girl sitting at a table. And they'd take a marshmallow, right, put it down in front of her. And then they'd be like, hey, this is your marshmallow. You can eat it. You can enjoy it. But if I'm going to leave, and I'm going to come back in 5 minutes. And if the marshmallow's still there, you get another marshmallow. So you get 2 marshmallows, right? And, like, cruel and unusual punishment, right? Like, that's terrible to do to kids. And so the scientists would leave the room, and the kids are, you know, they drool running down their face, their eyes are bugging out, and they want the second marshmallow, right? And they're actually, like, having an out-of-body experience, too. Like, their right arm is, like, reaching for the marshmallow, then their left arm intercepts it, you know, pulls themselves back. But every kid eats the marshmallow and has, like, one moment of joy before they realize, like, I'm not getting the second marshmallow. You know, it's, I mean, really cruel. But like, those to me are like the American ideas of endurance, right? You either survive and just try harder, or you just like get more willpower from the store or something, wherever willpower is sold. And so I don't think that the bootstraps or the marshmallows are really what Jesus has in mind when he's talking about us like living the good life over the long haul. I think the Bible proposes just a different model over and over again. And I think we see it, for example, like when the Israelites, God's people, are promised the promised land, right? They don't get it right away, right? They wander in circles for years and generations. But eventually it is delivered. And God is with them that whole time. Or we see it in Joseph when he had a dream as a boy that he was gonna rule, and then he was sold into slavery by his brothers and, you know, framed and then jailed. And it was 30 years later that he saw kind of his dream come into fruition. But like, that's the really, that's the mode that I think the Bible gives us. And so what I would propose is that Jesus' endurance is not equal to striving or trying harder, but it's more in waiting and trusting. And then in that waiting and trusting, taking one step after another, after another. And I think that's just, I do think they're opposites in many ways. So as I was preparing for this message, I was rereading a book by Eugene Peterson. We've talked about it here before. It's called A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. And it's a wonderful book, but also just in the title right there. Like that's the idea, right? Like, how do we live our lives? Is in a long obedience in the same direction, where we make it, in step with Jesus over the duration of our lives. And in that book, Eugene Peterson says, one aspect of the world that I've found harmful to Christians is the assumption that anything worthwhile can be acquired at once. So again, it's kind of antithetical to our common idea of endurance. And so what I want us to do is to consider, like, what are we relying on over the long haul? And remember that the difference between American endurance and Jesus' endurance is really about, like, whose responsibility is it to make it, to survive? Like, American endurance is all mine as an individual, right? Like, I need to tough it out. I need to grin and bear it. I need to make it. But with Jesus' endurance, Jesus is saying, like, walk with me, wait, listen. I will show up all over, over and over again. And Jesus is a God who he seeks and he saves and he redeems and he mends. So he's someone that can do it, right? Like, when we're aligned with him, like, that's how we make it. So I want to take a couple minutes and tell you a little bit about my story and how I've seen this happen and how I've seen, like, endurance happen with God doing a lot of work and me doing, like, none. So I grew up in the church. My parents are in ministry. I'm a pastor's kid. My parents are wonderful people. So as a pastor's kid, you grow up, like, seeing all the wonderful things at church, just like all the best parts of it. So I grew up in a Lutheran church, and I remember, as morbid as it sounds, I remember going to a ton of funerals with my dad, and I loved it because I got to hang out with my dad. And so it was a small town near St. Cloud, and what I knew of kind of church at that time was, like, at funerals, when someone passes away, the whole town comes, right? This is a Lutheran small town church. Everyone brings Jell-O with marshmallows or coconut flakes in it, and there'll be tubs of orange Kool-Aid that tastes horrible, and then hot dishes. And actually, you could tell how popular someone was by if you got, like, 3 hot dishes brought or, like, 60. Like, that was the barometer. But as a little kid, that was my idea of church. I was like, oh, you know, like, people take care of each other. So you see all the best parts of church and really our faith. But also, as a pastor's kid, you see you're really close to all the difficult parts. You know, and as a grown-up now, I get that, you know, where it's like, well, yeah, we're people. We're going to be ugly to each other from time to time. But as a kid, that can be really confusing, right, when you're seeing that. So through my teenage years and early 20s and when Janine and I met even, like, church was a really hard thing for me, a really confusing thing at times. I didn't get it. I liked what Jesus had to say, but I struggled with, like, what faith and religion looked like for me. And eventually, Janine and I got to the point where, I said to her, you know, like, I'm pretty burned out at this point, and I don't have a whole lot left in the tank for this. Like, I'll try going to one more church. If it doesn't work out, I'm done. And so we found a small church near us, and we began attending. And at first, that church was wonderful, and we made a lot of friends, and friends that we still have to this day. We made a lot of friends and began to serve, and we loved it. But about a year in, like, the bottom fell out. And the details of what happened aren't important or appropriate for this, but what I'll tell you is this. The senior pastor committed crimes for which he has since, like, done a lot of time in prison, and there are direct victims of those crimes that will, you know, sadly probably, like, always bear some scars from what happened. And then there are indirect victims and people, frankly, like myself, who, you know, I'd gone into that going, okay, like, this is, you know, maybe my last shot. And so we left that experience really hurt and tired and kind of broken. And I remember sitting with Janine one night at our house and said, like, that's it. Like, I'm done, you know. I won't be a part of a church again. Like, it's over for me. And so I want to take just a quick step back from that story. because when, you know, my idea is about endurance here. If it was up to me at that point to just try harder or, you know, pull myself up by the bootstraps or any of that, like, I wouldn't have made it. Like, I didn't have that in me. I had no interest in doing that. But I think God in his faithfulness, what he did was really remain close in the midst of kind of a wilderness experience, right? And so the interesting thing is, looking back on that time, like, I always believed that Jesus was who he says he was, right? That when he says, like, I'm the Prince of Peace, that I'm like, yeah, I believe that. I haven't seen that modeled in, like, what we do or even what I do as a Christian, but, like, I believe that, and on and on. And so it was a couple of years of this. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, that model of waiting and trusting is God, like, remaining close through heartache and through hard times and through difficulty, but had nothing to do with me, like, trying harder. And so, really, I think one of the key points is that, like, God doesn't mind a long and slow journey. He's okay with that. So when we're talking about the long haul of our lives, like, he is, as frustrating as it can be at times, like, he's perfectly content with not fixing things right away, but working them out in our lives over the long haul, and then using everything that comes of that. And so what happened for us is we didn't attend a church for years, a lot of years, actually. And eventually we moved up here to the north and lived here for a couple of years, I guess, and, you know, without going anyplace. And that got really exhausting. Janine was really gracious and loving through that, but, you know, that was hard in its own way. And then we heard people, friends of ours and people that are close to us, start talking about this place. And it was right around the time that we were starting to get planted. And people kept talking about a community of hope. And I had no prior experience with Vineyard churches. So now I know, like, that's how a lot of Vineyard places describe themselves. I didn't know it at the time, and I hadn't really heard that. And something about that idea really stuck close with me. A community of hope. And so I thought I was crazy when I was telling Janine this, but I was like, okay, like, if you want to go try this place, we can go. And so we actually came on the birthday we just celebrated here. We came on the first Sunday in this place. And it's really interesting looking back on it, because I didn't talk to anyone. Like, I avoided everyone out there and came and sat in the same place I still sit. I might need to switch that up, I guess. But I, like, avoided people. I don't remember any of the songs that were sung that day. I have no idea what Chris talked about. Sorry, Chris. I don't know why I looked up when I said, sorry, Chris. He's not up there. sorry, we're getting off topic here. So I don't remember anything about that day, but I was sitting, and halfway through the service, it occurred to me, like, I'm home. It was this really, like, fresh idea where I was like, I'm in a safe place. I'm in a place where I think, like, I'll be able to experience healing and hope and friendship and love, and it has been that. And so the reason I share that story is because, like, I didn't do anything. I did nothing. I waited and I listened and tried to pay attention as best I could. But really, God, I don't think, minded that it took a while, you know, that there wasn't an immediate fix. But he brought me back, for which I'm very thankful. I love this place. So how do we become a people of endurance? Like, practically, what does that look like in our life? Because in our lives? Because one of the things that I've loved about this sermon series is taking all these ideas, the fruits of the Spirit, and giving us practical ways to use them. Like, what does peace actually look like in our lives? Or what does gentleness look like? I think it was Dietrich that spoke on that. Like, it was just so good. What does that actually look like in our day-to-day lives? So I want to talk about that, both as individuals and as a community. What does endurance look like today? Like, Sunday, what does it look like today? And then over the next however long. So I have slides for this. The first one is we hope. Like we hope. That's what we do. If we want to become people of endurance, is we always hope. And I guess I think of it as hope is like the fuel. Hope is the fuel that keeps us going. So I talked about that, you know, that small flame. And when I was kind of in those wilderness years, in between places where I could gather with other Christians, like, that hope really dwindled down to a flicker. But all of us in this room have, you know, like, our, to use that metaphor, like, our flames are different sizes. And so as a community, we come together and we continue to hope. And I think of hope as the awareness that God is always good. if that's what hope is to me, that just knowing that God is always good, so that in our darkest times, in our hardest times, or in our best times, that we're always able to see that. So, right, hope is like the beacon in the distance. It's like our small flame that we keep our eye on. And sometimes within that hope, I think, does mean that we embrace our suffering or that we embrace our hard times. God uses all of those. And so it's kind of, you know, the best model of that is Jesus when he went to the cross. So remember, he was denied by his friends, left all alone and you know, beaten and humiliated. And then he bore his own cross, right? Like carried his own cross, just how humiliating and physically painful all of that must have been. But he endured all the way to the end, right? He could have called himself down from the cross, but he didn't. He endured all the way to the end. And then we read in Revelation, I think the best, kind of the best summary of what all of that was for, when he says, and he will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. So, you know, Jesus did all that because he makes all things new. And so I think that embracing our suffering and hoping, even in the midst of those really hard times, is one of the really key things to living a good life. And that's not fun, right? Like, I'm not proposing that that's fun. I would rather have not had those years away. I would rather not have had a lot of the hard times in my life. But if I am aware still of the goodness of God, even in the midst of that, I think that's something worth holding on to. If we're going to be a people who endure, we forgive. It's a really key thing. And I'll tell you this as plainly as I can. And I think we've all felt this. But where we're headed, like to a good life, to living a life close to Jesus, like what you're carrying with you, like you've got to let it go. We can't take it anymore. So those of us who have that hurt, unforgiveness, and the pain, I know it's hard, but we have to let that go. It's too heavy. We're not strong enough. So we have to find out what forgiveness means and what that looks like and practically how we do that in our lives. Because we just, like I said, we can't take it with us if we want to live a good life. You know, with that pastor at our previous church, like it took me a long time to come to a place where I would even think about forgiveness, because I was so badly hurt from that. And I think we've all been there, right? Like the people who have hurt us the most, it's really hard to even consider forgiveness. But I realized how that burden was weighing me down, to stopping me from going where I wanted to go with Jesus. And we have to get to that place. And that's a messy process too. Like there's still days, years and years later, where I'm angry, where I'm frustrated with that, where I'm still hurt. And so that's a process, and that's okay. But we have to forgive. I think that's what's talking about in 1 Corinthians 13, when it says that love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. So there's like all the hard times in your life, and then there's like the love of Christ that covers all that. And I think that's what we want to hold on to. If we're going to be a people who endure, we need to ask for help. So way, you know, back to the American idea of endurance. Like you don't really ask for help. You know, we do this on our own. We're individuals. We can take care of it. We're tough people. But what we're trying to endure, what like this congregation right now is talking about, what this community is talking about, of trying to live a good life with Jesus, what we're trying to endure, like life isn't a fun run. Like it's not like all lollipops and candy canes and stuff. Like it's hard. It's really hard at times. It's really good too and really rich, but it's hard. And so if we're trying to go it alone, like we won't make it. We're not designed for that. We're not created to be individuals who exist outside of community. Like we are designed together. That's why small groups are so important. Or like the C.S. Lewis quote that Jeff shared, where like friendship gives value to our survival. Like those things are so important for us, and we ask for help because there's an active enemy in our lives, right? Like. And there's like the effects of sin and death are all around. They're in our communities and in our families, and then they're in our own hearts, right? We struggle with addictions and loneliness and pain. So like what we're trying to survive, we need help. We need to be able to do it together. So we need to be able to ask for help and offer help. And if we endure, if we live a good life, what that means is that we've done like what it says in Galatians, that when it says bear each other's burdens, right? That we walk with each other, and that when I'm wounded and tired that I'm going to have someone to come pick me up and help me walk really slowly for the next stage of our journey. We might not go far, but we'll do it together. And then I'm going to get better, right? I'm going to heal up, and then I'm going to do the same for someone else in here. And that's the idea that I think this place has done well. Like, this place has been that for me, but we ask for help. If we're going to be a people who endure, we look for miracles. And I guess I mean like really big and flashy miracles in a way, but really what I mean is like God intervening in a way that only God can do. Like we pay attention to those. So when the Israelites were walking in the wilderness, you know, they're grumbling, they're complaining, as is expected, but God shows up every day, right? He delivers them from captivity. He has bread show up on the ground every morning. He has quail showing up. You know, they're eating just fine. There's water. Like, those are miraculous things, right? Like where God is always intervening and showing up. Because the key point here is that God wants us to make it. Like, and he wants us to live a good life, and he wants us to, again, for however long we have breath in our lungs, he wants that to be good for us. What that looked like for me was, you know, we moved up here, and the miracle for me was God saying, yeah, like, I already have everything in the works. Like, we're planting a church, like, 3 miles away from you guys, and it's going to be great. Like, that was a huge miracle for me. Like, this place doesn't have to exist, but there are a lot of people that really love Jesus, that had a vision for how Cloquet and the surrounding area can be impacted. Like, that was a miracle for me. That wasn't just, you know, the run-of-the-mill stuff. And so God always sustains us with the intention of us enduring, with the intention of us making it. He wants that. And finally, we become a community of hope by embracing community, right? By continuing to build and become a community of hope and offer that to anyone who comes here. And not just here, like that's the idea of Christianity in general, but our shared responsibility, like the people in this room, our shared responsibility is to become a manifestation of that hope, right? To be the people that reach out, to be the people that take care of hurting, feed the hungry, nurture those who are wounded. Like that's what it looks like, and we endure together. So we're taking this journey as a group, and I think that's what it's talking about in Romans 15 when it says, "May the God who gives endurance and encouragement give you the same attitude of mind toward each other that Christ Jesus had." You know, we're saying you all are going to encourage each other, going to lift each other up, you're going to take care of each other. That's the point. I heard a pastor recently say, like one of the mottos of their church is to everyone else who doesn't come is just come as you are. And he says, like, that's threatening for a lot of places, right? Like, come as you are, because then people come as they are, like, bring all their mess in, or, you know, like, that can be threatening for groups. And this pastor said, no, we want everyone to come, like, the wounded, the sick, the hungry, the addicted, we want them to come. And then when they come, they're not going to stay who they are, because we're all doing this together, like, we're helping each other. But come as you are. And that's what this place is and can continue to be. One of the best examples, I'm going to wrap things up pretty quick here. One of the best examples of that type of community, which kind of spurns the worldly way of doing things and takes like a Jesus way of doing things, is the South Dakota State basketball team. So I played college basketball. We played against the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. And so they were in the news a couple years ago, so I was following them, just knowing their coach and some of the players. And they were in the news because they were transitioning from Division II to Division I, and they had a really good team that year. And why that was important was because they had the chance for the first time in their history to go to the big dance. So the end of season, Final Four tournament, 64 teams start, one ends. You know, like no one works for like 4 days in the whole nation because we're watching the games, awesome. But so they had the chance to go for the first time. And so ESPN sent a reporter cover them for like the last month of their season. The reporter goes and just, he's observing how tight-knit of a team they are. They love each other. They take care of each other. And so it's the night of the conference title game. So if the Jackrabbits win, they get into the big dance. And if they lose, they go home. So they're playing a team that they had already played twice that year and beaten them by 20 points both times. So walk in the park, right? Well, the game starts, and they're turning the ball over. They're missing easy shots. The nerves are high, right? They're bickering with each other, which the reporter said they never bickered with each other. But they're yelling at each other. And they go into halftime down like 7 points. And the other team has all the momentum. And so the reporter, who had full access, walks into the locker room. He said it was like walking into a funeral. Like the players, like Their heads are hanging, their shoulders are drooping, frustrated with themselves and frustrated with each other. And I think as any athlete would know, they're also thinking, what's the coach going to say when he comes in? Like, is he going to single me out, tell me to try harder, call out my mistakes? So sure enough, the coach walks in and no one looks up. Right? The room braces themselves. But the coach doesn't say anything. And he walks into the middle of the room and he stands there with his hands in his pockets. And eventually his players begin to look at him one by one and they see that he's smiling. So eventually as all the players looking at him, and he says, men, we didn't play like ourselves that half. Like, that wasn't us, and I'm not going to yell at you about it. We don't need to talk about it anymore. But he goes, when you take the court for the second half, I want you to go out there, and I want you to play like you're loved. And he said, you all have, you know, people who have traveled for this game. You have your parents in the stands and your brothers and sisters. Some of you have girlfriends or grandparents here. And, you know, no matter whether you win or lose tonight, they're going to, you know, love you the same. So just go out and play like you're loved. Like, I think that is one of the most beautiful stories of community that is pointed towards enduring together that I've heard, because, you know, he shifted the view from their immediate trouble to really the entirety of their lives, right? Like this event, although important, isn't the end of their story. Like, they had people that loved them, they had value in their lives, they had community. I think that is spectacular. And they did win the game by like 20 points. So it worked. It's a bonus point to that story. But like, that's what I think this place is. That's what I think this place can continue to be. A place that we remain aligned with Jesus and committed to each other in the midst of the really hard things. And that instead of like documenting all of our rules and failures and all of that, that we remind each other that we're loved, that we love each other, that we're going to take care of each other, and that we're all going to make it together. And so I guess, honestly, if I am a sentimental person, so I guess, like, if you haven't heard that lately, like, I want you to hear that from me. Like, I think we need to tell each other that. So, like, today when you leave this place, if you have been having a hard time, go back into that place knowing that you're loved, that you have people here, and hopefully other places as well, but you have people here that love you and that want to take care of you, that want you to live a good life along with all of us. So we're gonna wrap it up here. We're gonna spend some time praying if you need prayer. So for those of you who don't often come here or haven't been here before, if you need prayer, if you need encouragement or hope today, there'll be people up front here, if y'all wanna come down too, that'd be great, who will pray with you. And it's nothing weird. What those people are gonna do is they're gonna ask you what you want Jesus to do in your life. And then they're gonna pray with you about that. No one's gonna be watching you. Come on down. There's a specific group of people that I was really thinking a lot about when I was writing this, because it's what a lot of my conversations have been about apart from this place. And it's people who feel like stuck in a cycle of failure or addiction, and there's so much shame and guilt that come along with that. And it's hard to envision how you're going to endure over the long haul if you're in that place, right? So if that's you, you don't need to come, like, spill your guts. But come and just invite Jesus into that place and let someone love on you for a little bit. Thank you, and have a nice day.